The effects of climate change are getting worse in every part of the country.
Stronger storms, devastating drought, heat waves, and wildfires.
Earth reaching its highest temperature on record for a fourth day in a row.
It's affecting Americans right now, no matter where they live.
Are we running out of time to avoid the worst impacts of climate change?
As scientists and leaders continue to warn about the catastrophic impacts of climate change, the stakes grow higher. Experts on climate science and the impact of climate change are gathering in Cincinnati December 1st for the 2023 Environmental Justice and Advocacy Symposium to discuss the changing climate, air quality, and activism. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today, we're going to talk about those themes and what needs to happen to protect our planet. Joining me now are NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory climate scientist and climate activist Peter Kalmus, who's the keynote speaker for the symposium. Thanks for being here, Peter.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lucy.
And University of Cincinnati associate professor and educator Bob Hyland, who organized the event. Welcome back, Bob.
Glad to be here.
The University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Peter, I want to stress first, you're a climate scientist for NASA and a climate activist, and I know you're here speaking in a personal capacity. You'll be speaking in a personal capacity at the symposium. I want to ask you first about this latest climate report from the UN. It had more bad news in it. What are your main takeaways from that report? What should world leaders be doing to address this problem we face?
Yeah, well, there's been so many reports over the years, over the decades, and none of this should really be a surprise anymore. These are trends, right? So the way this works, the more fossil fuels we burn, the more carbon dioxide and methane get dumped into our atmosphere. And these chemicals interact with radiation that's trying to get out from a planet into deep space, which balances incoming sunlight. So the more of that stuff blocking the outgoing heat radiation, the hotter the planet gets. It's as simple as that. So we're getting steadily hotter and hotter, and this will continue as long as we keep burning fossil fuels. So this is a trend. So as this trend continues, I think of it like an escalator. Every day, basically, we're going a little bit higher up this escalator every year. And that's why these impacts, the flooding, the heat waves, the wildfires and smoke, the ice melting, the ocean getting warmer, the Amazon dying, the coral reefs dying, all this stuff continues to get worse because it's a trend. And that's my main takeaway. I as a climate scientist, I really want the public to understand what a trend means, because it means that on average, next year is going to be worse than this year. And then the year after, that's going to be worse. And then so on, until things literally get unbearable for certain aspects of our global society, for certain people in certain regions, for certain ecosystems. They just start to collapse for certain, you know, agriculture, crops. So that's why it's so important to start ramping down fossil fuels as quickly as we can, because that's what's causing this.
So here in the U.S., Peter, what should we make of the Inflation Reduction Act? Will its clean energy measures help?
I don't think it's enough. I mean, I guess it's better than nothing. It's broken my heart to see one of our political parties literally say that, you know, this is a hoax. It's not happening. It just, as an educated citizen, this absolutely kills me. But the fact is, the other political party hasn't been doing enough either. The Inflation Reduction Act, it's got some good stuff in it. It's roughly 6%. The climate things in the IRA amount to roughly 6% of what the U.S. spends on its military, if you annualize it. So to me, that's not enough, but you know, to have a livable planet. But it's also kind of hopeful, because if we actually started taking global heating seriously, I think we could solve it quite quickly as a species. And then the last thing I'll say is the IRA should not be taken as an excuse for any White House, for any administration to continue approving pipelines and building pipelines and approving more drilling and encouraging OPEC to increase production and so on, right? So the Inflation Reduction Act's kind of good. It has some good stuff about like heat pumps and electric vehicles and so forth. We need that. But what's really killing us is expanding the fossil fuel industry. And the only way out of this has to involve stopping that expansion and then starting to contract the fossil fuel industry and eventually end it. And unfortunately, the IRA does not do that, at least not directly.
So, Peter, is there any U.S. political leader that we can look to for clear direction on climate change who's really doing the right things, in your view?
Oh, wow. That's a great question, Lucy. Unfortunately, not. I would, in my opinion, President Biden is still not doing the right thing. You know, the very least, I was hoping that he would use the bully pulpit to educate the public on how urgent this issue is, maybe have a program to push back against disinformation from the fossil fuel industry, which, you know, some great science historians have brought to light. That the fossil fuel industry, there's documents, it's very well documented. The fossil fuel industry since the 1970s has been very systematically, very concertedly colluding to spread disinformation and to block action through campaign contributions to both parties at, you know, local, state, and federal levels, right? So this is very well known. In 2021, four fossil fuel CEOs went in front of Congress, and Congress asked them, basically, will you stop spreading disinformation? And they hemmed and hawed, but they would not say, yes, we will stop spreading disinformation. So they effectively said, this is the fossil fuel industry, effectively said, we will continue to lie and spread disinformation and block climate action. So there needs to be some pushback, I think, at the federal level, because the reason there's not political space to have the kind of real policies we need to directly get us out of this emergency as quickly as we can, the reason there isn't that space is because the public hasn't yet recognized what climate scientists recognize, which is that we are in a life or death emergency right now, and the damage we're doing to our Earth is irreversible. Once the public understands that, then I think change, systemic change, policy change, will be much more achievable and will happen probably more quickly than we can imagine.
Bob, the symposium at UC on Friday is going to be looking at climate change through kind of an environmental justice lens. Why was that such an important focus for you, you know, as somebody who worked so hard to organize this event?
Sure. So the Environmental Justice and Advocacy Symposium this year is the third annual. And so we've been working to develop environmental justice curriculum for undergrads at the University of Cincinnati who are interested in making a change in the community and more broadly. And so climate change is an inherently justice related issue, like most other environmental risks. So people of color, people with lower incomes, the global south are disproportionately going to be affected by climate change. And so it is just a natural fit for the general theme of the symposium.
And, you know, Peter, we've been seeing that already. NASA announced in September that this past summer was the hottest on record, at least since global records began in 1880. Talk to us some more about the implications of that, what we saw in the U.S. and in North America as a result, and around the world.
Yeah, so I, as a scientist, some of the things I study are how ecosystems are being impacted by increasing heat waves, both in the ocean and on land. And, you know, things are not looking good for coral reefs. Things are not looking good for our forests. Pretty much anywhere you look on the planet, you see the impacts of increasing heat. I also study how extreme humid heat is going to affect humans, you know, urban heat island effects, how our bodies respond to extreme humid heat, how this affects outdoor laborers and so forth. And again, the thing that keeps me up at night is that this is a trend, and it's getting worse every year. And it's not a new normal. It's not like something that is going to have mercy on us and level off right before it gets unbearable. It's physics. And it's physics, it's you know, molecules of carbon dioxide that don't care who's in the White House. They don't care where they've been emitted or why. They're just in there, in the atmosphere, blocking outgoing radiation, making the planet get hotter. So I'm really concerned that in the near future, we're going to start seeing a real agricultural collapse that causes widespread famine, for example. I'm afraid that we're going to start seeing heat waves that lead to, you know, a million people dying over the course of a few days. And then it won't stop there is what really, this is what really freaks me out, right? Is that it just, as long as we keep burning fossil fuels, this all just keeps getting worse. It's not something that, it's just the laws of physics. And for people in public office to not understand that, I mean, I feel like this is something that, you know, any reasonably intelligent fifth grader could understand. And yet we have members of Congress who say it's a hoax and who say that the science isn't settled and so forth. And I just don't know how we got here as a country. And the implications are frankly deadly.
Well, and Peter, I know you've said that people are under the impression that these changes can be reversed, kind of like cleaning up a park. Well, what's the reality?
Yeah, so the reality is once you let that cat out of the bag, once you open Pandora's box and those CO2 molecules are up there in the atmosphere, natural earth processes take a very long time to get them back out of the atmosphere. And the higher the final temperature gets of global heating, right? So eventually, for one reason or another, we will stop emitting fossil fuels. Hopefully it's because we choose to. But however hot the earth gets, it's going to stay that hot for quite a long time. And there's multiple timescales for the damage that we're doing to our planet. So if we suppose we let it get to like 2.5 degrees of global heating, which would be awful over pre-industrial levels, it'll stay that hot for a while. I don't know. No, it's hard to say exactly how long, a few hundred years maybe. But then the for example, the sea level rise and the ice sheet loss, that will persist for thousands or maybe tens of thousands of years. And then the extinction, the ecosystem loss and the biodiversity loss, that will persist for up to 10 million years because we've seen previous mass extinctions on our planet. And you can see how long in the fossil record it takes for biodiversity to recover. And that's a very long time. Like, keep in mind that the timescale of human existence is something like 100,000 years. So we're talking 100 times longer than humans have essentially been around recognizably as humans, this long tail of damage to our planet. And then, you know, the fossil fuel industry wants to promote this a very dangerous narrative of carbon capture, as if we can somehow put this on our kids, on young people, that like we're going to kind of keep emitting CO2, burning fossil fuels and emitting CO2 willy-nilly, and somehow expect our children to come up with a technology and to spend a huge fraction of their GDP to pull that, to reverse that process, the process that's literally powering our economy right now, to reverse that and pull it out of the atmosphere somehow, to while they're dealing with increasing heat waves and crop failures and floods. It's just the most irresponsible thing, and it may never work out at scale, right? So that what we really have to do is just directly address the real root cause, which is the fossil fuel industry. It's not plastics are bad, but that's a separate issue from global heating, which is caused mainly by burning fossil fuels. And the second biggest cause is animal agriculture, which contributes at roughly the 15% level. So until we deal with those two industries head on, this is all going to keep getting worse. Forget about hydrogen, forget about carbon capture. I'll even go out on a limb and say, like, don't put too much weight on recycling and compost. I mean, those aren't bad things, but they're not going to stop global heating. We have to come together. This is why activism is so important. We have to come together and ramp down the fossil fuel industry, take its power away as quickly as we can.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk with Cincinnati ultra marathon runner Harvey Lewis about the psychology behind crushing a world record. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about climate change and environmental justice, themes that will be discussed during a symposium on December 1st at the University of Cincinnati. My guests are NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory climate scientist and climate activist Peter Kalmus, who's the keynote speaker for the symposium and is speaking here in a personal capacity, and University of Cincinnati associate professor and educator Bob Hyland, who organized the symposium. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk at wvxu.org. We did get an email from Kevin. Kevin emails, one point regarding lack of constraints on fossil and advocacy activism, all is needed. I hope, though, that your guests discuss how this is blocked by political dysfunction. Activism in urban areas, which generally already support politicians who get climate, neglects persuading voters in rural areas who elect teams who block real policy. Are we missing the boat in terms of our efforts if we don't try to persuade rural voters, linking to their values so that we can effectively change their priorities? What do you think about that, Peter?
Oh, it's an excellent point and an excellent question. My dad, interestingly, is a Republican although he's a Republican, he still thinks that climate is a very urgent issue and that we urgently need to act on it. So he's a little bit rare. And he's constantly telling me that I need to reach out to conservatives more and talk to them directly. And I've taken that to heart. I would like to do it a lot more as long as the discussion can be respectful, essentially. And then the other thing I'll say is I would love to hear from farmers in rural regions because they are really on the front lines of global heating. And, you know, a lot of times they're conservatives, a lot of times they're Republicans. And if we could talk to them and if they could organize and maybe, you know, if they believe this is really happening and if they see how it's hurting their bottom lines and if they are concerned about the future of their farms and their livelihoods, that could be incredibly powerful, I think. But so far, I haven't seen a lot of, you know, farmers taking the mic and sort of explaining their plight to, you know, to other conservatives, for example.
Hmm. Bob, in addition to Peter, who's the keynote speaker at the symposium on December 1st, you're going to have several local experts who are going to lead breakout sessions about the impact of these issues in Cincinnati and across Ohio. Tell us a bit about what Dr. Angelico Mendi will be discussing in his session. That sounds like some very local impacts.
Yep. So Dr. Mendi is an assistant professor of environmental and public health science at UC, and he has a PhD from the University of Iowa, as well as an MD from the University of Dakar. Together with collaborators, Dr. Mendi has dozens of peer-reviewed publications looking at various factors that can affect respiratory health. And at the symposium, he'll be talking about air pollution, particularly PM2.5, which is particulate matter 2.5, which is the real small stuff that can enter the bloodstream, and how it affected COVID severity and outcomes here in Cincinnati, on which he has data. But the conversation may expand to other issues. He's an expert on asthma and factors that can exacerbate that as well. So it's going to be a great breakout.
Yeah. Well, and those are impacts that affect lower income neighborhoods much more severely, right? I mean, that's what we're seeing here locally and across the country.
Yeah, that's true. So typically, lower incomes and marginalized communities live closer to interstates. So the particulate matter is up there. They generally are more prone to having lower indoor air quality due to older housing stock and disrepair and things like that. So there's no question that this is an environmental justice issue and that BIPOC folk, lower income folk, will be more immediately impacted by wildfire smoke, other types of particulate pollution.
We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Kathy, thanks so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hi, I just wanted to first thank your two guests for doing this very important work, and I agree with everything that they're saying. Just to sort of overcome cynicism, how do we kind of change the economic incentives to really make politicians and industries sort of stand up for our future?
Great question, Thanks. Kathy. What do you think, Peter?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's such a huge and important question. It's going to take more time, I think, to have a very complete answer to that than we have. But I'll just say that I think where we are now kind of goes all the way back hundreds of years to essentially extractive colonial capitalism, which is not something that humans have had for their entire existence. But where we are now is essentially we've got these corporations and billionaires for whom the next quarterly report and their quarterly profits are the most important thing. And they've gotten basically so much capital that that capital accrues more capital. And it's this kind of like vicious cycle where they kind of gain a larger and larger fraction of wealth, which is why there's such a huge wealth disparity. And you know, within the US and also between the US and developing nations, which is a huge part of the problem here, right? But also that concentration of wealth in the hands of a few allows them to affect the legal system and to essentially control our politics and to buy media corporations and control the message that the public hears. So it's a huge problem, you know, the problem of money in politics, the problem of disinformation, which is preventing the public from really realizing what an urgent situation we're in. And, you know, one great policy that we could have if the public prioritized this would be, for example, a revenue, well, what I call a climate income, which would make fossil fuels get more expensive. But then critically, that money would go back to everybody in, for example, like a quarterly dividend check. And that's really important because if you fund the transition to clean energy away, fund the transition away from fossil fuels on the backs of working class people, they'll say, like, I can't afford to get to work. I can't afford to pay my rent and put food on the table. And then they'll vote for politicians who promise to roll back those climate policies. So you have to make sure that this is funded by the wealthiest people who are also causing the greatest climate impacts.
Thanks so much for that important question, Kathy. We appreciate it. We also had a caller, Shannon. She did not stay on the line, but Shannon said she owns oil stock. She's thinking about selling it. Is there any power in selling that stock? Would it help at all? Should she write a letter to the oil companies to make a point and explain why she's selling it? What kind of impact do acts like that have, Peter?
Yes, please. All of the above. Do all of those things. I think we all should just start orienting ourselves away from the fossil fuel industry and toward ending it and moving to clean energy. So in every way that we can, whether that means selling our oil stock and maybe, you know, buying some renewable energy stocks, for example, or moving the institutions that we're at, our universities, our companies, our businesses, you know, our town councils, just moving them away from fossil fuels and towards renewable energies as quickly as possible in every possible way, because fossil fuels are so just deeply woven into the way we live today.
Yeah. Bob, oil and gas drilling in Ohio has been such a hot topic lately, especially with the state legislation that opens the possibility for fracking under state-owned land. I know you have Amy Townsend Small, who will be talking about the state's legacy of oil and gas drilling on Friday. Tell us a little bit about the points she's going to be making.
Yeah, so Dr. Townsend Small is a professor in the UC School of Environment and Sustainability, and she has done a very interesting search on orphaned fracking wells. So these are fracking wells that are no longer operational, that the initial owners have found a way to not be the owner of record on, and they're just releasing methane into the atmosphere. And so she's done some research on that, and we'll talk about that. And beyond that, she has dozens of publications with collaborators on greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuel production. So where that conversation might lead specifically, I don't know.
Yeah.
But one quick thing I want to shout out is there's also going to be undergraduate students at UC presenting their research. And as Dr. Kalmus mentioned up at the top of the show, this is a trend, and this is likely going to get worse if we don't do something fast. And it's these young people who are getting really energetic and doing really interesting things in their scholarship that I think we need to celebrate and center. And one way to do that would be to come to the symposium and see what they're up to. But I just wanted to slide that in there.
Yeah, yeah. Peter, you know, I mentioned this controversy that's been happening in Ohio with this potential fracking under state-owned land. The oil and gas industry is saying, hey, we can do this safely and it's important. We need these resources. What do you think about that?
It's a joke to say that they can do it safely. I mean, they're completely ignoring the climate impacts, the global heating, which is the most dangerous thing of all, right? So yeah, they think they can not maybe do it without polluting waterways, which is debatable, right? Because their track record is so dismal there, but they're completely ignoring the fact that our planet is overheating and, you know, we're losing ecosystems and we're going to be facing deadly heat, not to mention all the other climate impacts. So yeah, it's laughable.
We got an email from Sarah. We're running out of time, so I won't read the whole thing. But Sarah writes, I guess what gives me the most angst is convincing the people who absolutely will not believe climate change is an issue. They're steadfast in their beliefs about many issues, even if it stares them squarely in the face. What do you do with that? It can keep you up at night if you think about it. How do you reckon with that, Peter?
Is the trillion-dollar question. You know, I think there are some conservatives that we should be talking to, as I said earlier, but mostly if they're not willing, you know, if somebody says 2 + 2 = 5, you're basically talking to an insane person, and how do I convince them that 2 + 2 = 4? But there's a lot of people who get that this is happening, but don't really know what to do, who maybe don't understand quite how urgent it is. And I think those are the people that we can talk to. The ones who say it's not happening at all, they're a pretty small fraction still.
Well, there's so much more to cover, but we've run out of time. I've been talking with NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory climate scientist and climate activist Peter Kalmus and University of Cincinnati associate professor and educator Bob Hyland. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lindsay.
The 2023 Environmental Justice and Advocacy Symposium will be from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. December 1st at the University of Cincinnati. The event is free and open to the public. You can find a link to register on our website, wvxu.org. Up next, Cincinnati ultra marathon runner Harvey Lewis will talk about the psychology behind crushing a world record. This is Cincinnati Edition.